He provides integrative health and health literacy wellness programming to underserved population across the United States, including the South Bronx, New York, rural Missouri, Cleveland, Ohio, Western Massachusetts, and Tucson. He has over 20 years of experience in community mobilization and planning, including with tribal communities and communities within American Samoa and the Republic of the Marshall Islands. I leave you with our presenters.
All right. Thank you. Now we're just trying to figure out how to get a project in Puerto Rico next. That's all. Hi, everybody. I'm Andrew Pleasant. Thanks for sticking around, because it is cool to see people at a late session of the American Public Health Association annual conference. It doesn't always happen. Is this going to be loud enough for everybody in the back just to check?
No, yeah.
Nope. I need to make myself more my brother's height. There we go. That'll work out pretty well. So I'm just going to kick this off, and then Chuck, my colleague, is going to follow it up. I don't know if you heard him earlier. He said the funniest thing about this slide, that it's actually quite sad. But we... but it's, we all have relationships in our lives. We maybe just choose not to disclose them. I don't know. But I'm going to steal that line forever. We're here, but there's a lot of people behind this effort that we're going to tell you about, even more than are actually on the slide here, because we just don't have room. But we do everything that we do in communities through partnerships with local, culturally relevant, smart, active, proactive organizations. Healthcare providers are a large part of that. Canyon Ranch Institute, which probably none of you have heard of before, is a very small nonprofit public charity based in Tucson, Arizona, but we work around the world. Our focus is on preventing chronic disease using a truly integrative approach to health and wellness based on the best practices of health literacy. And we have explicitly set the goal of not reducing, but eliminating health inequities. We figure reducing is fine, but what's the point if you can't get rid of them altogether, to be honest about it. So we base our approach on health literacy on the Calgary Charter on Health Literacy. And as I let you all sort of read that definition, which is different from the most commonly cited definition in terms of words, but it's very different in terms of meaning and implementation, I also pause to tell you that as a member of the Institute of Medicine Roundtable on Health Literacy, you should all come to California in about a week. What do we say, November the 20th? 21st, thank you, because that will be a whole day session focusing on health literacy in public health contexts. And if you don't want to fly to California, it'll be a webinar too, but I'd rather see you there in person. And another really quick advertisement is if anybody's looking for a postdoc, look at our website, just to say. So the Calgary Charter on Health Literacy is the first definition to explicitly propose health literacy as a two-sided phenomenon between the demands supplied by the health systems, or the sick care systems as they may be, and the abilities of individuals to actually successfully interact with those. The other thing that it does very explicitly is distinguish health literacy from the simple use of literacy skills in a health context. That is a very important distinction to make in our view, and as a result, this model of health literacy proposes that what it is actually is a new theory of behavior change. That it's not only about the level of skills that you have, it's what you do with the skills that you do have. People who have low literacy skills can be very healthy. They can make excellent decisions. It is helpful if you provide them with some support along this logic model. Find, understand, evaluate, communicate, and then use health information to make an informed decision about your health. The differences between this and the original IOM health literacy definition, which I won't get into the history of that, but that's now over 10 years old. And in the upcoming commission paper for the IOM to support the public health workshop I just told you about, we argue, the co-authors and I, that it's time to change that. And we will propose that this is the way to go, right? You help people find information, you make sure that they understand it. That's where plain language stops. That's where most health literacy stops, at understanding. But a friend of mine at World Health Organization years ago highlighted the difference between what people know and what they do. The no-do gap. Doctors smoke. So what's going on there, right? This can take you beyond that. You have to evaluate what you know in the context of your own life, right? And then you make a decision. But to help support that decision, you have to communicate it with people along the way. Alcoholics Anonymous, among others, figured this out a long time ago. If you want to make a change in your health behaviors, you need to communicate it with people to get social support. And then you'll be able to use it and actually change your behaviors. All through that logic model, you have to pay attention to those four domains underneath, right? Fundamental literacy, yes, you have to use appropriate levels of language, not just sixth grade level. We take a pretty strong stance, actually, that if you only communicated health information at the sixth grade level, people would never learn anything more than the sixth grade level. So we want to start people at fourth, fifth, and sixth, but we want to finish with them at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and beyond. And to do that, you have to advance your language and their skills to understand it. You have to pay attention to their understanding of science and risk. You have to pay attention to the cultural grounding that you're working in. And the notion of civic literacy is simply straightly drawn from Paulo Freire's notion of literacy as a tool of empowerment. So we built all of that into this program. And with that, I'm going to let Chuck tell you how it actually works.
Hi, I'm not Andrew. I'm Chuck, and this is the perfect height for me. Thank you very much. Andrew laid out a really brief but strong model for health literacy. And what we've done is really kind of prove the concept for a program based on these concepts of health literacy, but really wrapping them in terms of implementation in a model of integrative health. And what integrative health is for some people is nothing more or less than sort of the mind-body-spirit notion, the holistic approach. What we do with this program, the CRI Life Enhancement Program, is we take generally these four areas here of integrative medicine, physical activity, spirituality or a sense of purpose, and nutrition, and meld them together, not always seamlessly, not easily, but with the help of teams of professionals that I'll describe in a moment. The CRI LEP focuses on low-income underserved folks. We work with healthcare providers who are closely linked into their communities. We provide the training for their teams, but it is their program ultimately to deliver and perfect. But one thing that stays very constant is that it's very rigorously evaluated. We have a number of sites around the country. The newest sites on this map are Pittsfield, Massachusetts. We're about to get started in training with the Savannah team, and we'll be starting in San Antonio with a CRI Life Enhancement Program aimed at teens. This program that I'll be describing is aimed at adults. The average age is somewhere between 45 and 55, but we have people all over the range. We've had hundreds of people go through the program, and I'll show you some outcome data with over 200 matched pairs. This program is a program that's delivering health literacy. It's delivering a lot of practice, a lot of important components through a professional team that our healthcare provider partners put together with these types of components. Every single person on a core team has to be a professional, has to be trained, has to be certified, and is trained by us ultimately in this program. As part of the training, just to be sure that everybody's sort of on the same page with implementing this program, which is not easy to do, as I'm describing, this is a highly intensive process. Core team members from wherever they are spend a week at the Canyon Ranch Health Spa going through their Life Enhancement Center and that Life Enhancement Program, upon which this was based about 7 years ago in the South Bronx. Following that time, everybody gets 1 week's worth of training by Canyon Ranch Institute on site, and then technical assistance and training lasts for the duration of our partnership, which is, if we can help it, forever. The participants that are recruited into the program are usually at high risk for chronic disease, are always from low-income and traditionally underserved communities, and they go through a program that combines group sessions, for example, 12 group sessions that might have food demonstrations, cooking demonstrations, a facilitated trip to the grocery store. They practice exercise. They're encouraged to practice in between these weekly or twice weekly sessions. They go through a rigorous assessment process I'll describe. And what's very important is that they all have a chance to spend at least 4 one-hour sessions each with an integrative health specialist, like who's usually an MD or an RN, a behavioral health specialist, a nutritionist, an exercise physiologist or fitness professional, and often can spend another hour with a pharmacist or a spirituality professional. One thing that's important about this is that this four-hour period of time that people are spending really learning how to interact efficiently with their with these health professionals is often 4 times the national average of the amount of time a person spends with a healthcare professional in a year. This is up here just to let you know that no program site gets started without an extensive formative assessment phase with Canyon Ranch Institute, where we incorporate those results into the findings of the into the program training rather itself. I'm going to let Andrew start here and kind of describe some of the results of the program and give us a couple of stories.
Because I love stories. Narrative theory is pretty much correct. We do a ton of assessment. We do a very thorough assessment before the program, right after the program ends. 3 months after the program ends, we come back and do the blood work, because it takes about that long for blood work to change if you've started moving your body and eating differently. And then we do it all again at 1 year plus the program. In one of the newest sites here in Massachusetts, we're going to add a plus 2 year evaluation component to the program to really, really pin down sustainability of changes. The entire evaluation roughly takes about 2 hours to accomplish. It is a very long oral survey, and then we do physical measurements, then we do the blood work. We don't do it all on the same day. So we don't have people come in for a fasting blood work and then ask them questions for an hour and then put them on the treadmill, right? So, but maybe we should know. No. So it's usually a couple visits before the program starts to get all this done. And we'll show you that it actually is worth doing all this data collection. And in no small part, to be very frank about it, we ask people these questions so many times, so often, that we're telling them, this is important. You need to pay attention to these things. And as a result of that and the intervention, which is very tailored and personalized to each community, we've made some really dramatic, all of these are statistically significant, changes in people's lives. And this is just a sampling of the outcomes, because if we only have 15 minutes. But I myself, and I'd like to say this modestly, but I just don't. I've never seen a program produce this level of effect in people's lives myself. And if you have, I'd love to hear about it so we can steal their best ideas too. all of them across the board. And this is averaged results across 4 sites of the 6. And the reason it's only 4 is because the other ones are pretty new and they haven't really gotten enough people. It's about 20 people at a time that go through the program in small groups. And it's usually 12 weeks, but in the South Bronx, for example, they do it in 6 weeks. They just double up the amount of contact time per week. If anybody like Qualys here, or am I just speaking to an empty room at this point in time? All right, this turns out to be a very cost-effective intervention. Over 100 people, based on Qualys, it's between, you know, there's a range. No one knows exactly what a Qualys costs, but the range says that we're between $376,000 and over $500,000 cheaper than the average intervention to produce the same level of effect in people's lives. That, by the way, is more than the program costs. So right off the bat, we're coming in at a very cost-effective level, but the most cool thing, how many minutes do we have?
Two.
One story. Dean Rutland. We also, you know, in addition to the quantitative data, we actually pay attention to the people in the program. So we know Dean Rutland, and they've told us her story. She lives in Cleveland, inner city Cleveland. If anybody of you know the neighborhoods, well, not truly inner city, it's out around the Cleveland Clinic on that part of town. Poverty in the midst of a white palace of healthcare. But anyway, Dean was walking through the neighborhood and saw a flyer on the wall. She'd been feeling bad about her own life and saw a flyer for the program and said, that's what I need. So she called up the core team lead and they made an appointment. She came in for the assessment and her blood pressure was so high, she had no idea, that they said, you need to walk right across the street to the doctor right now. So Dean walked out of the office and got in the elevator and broke down crying. And she did go to the doctor, but she wasn't going to come back and participate in the program because she was petrified of what else she'd find out that was wrong about her life. So, but our core teams are phenomenally cool. One of them called her up over the weekend and said, Dean, I know you were scared, but you really need to come in. You're going to find out that everybody else in this program is just as scared as you are, and you're going to make some friends, and we're going to help you get healthier, and we're going to help you take care of this. So she stuck it out, and she stayed with the program through the 12 weeks, and she started walking, which she'd never done before, and she started eating better, which she'd never done before, and she lost a large amount of weight, and that is a picture of Dean crossing the finish line of her very first 5K. And her quote is that when I crossed it, I felt like I wanted to keep going, so her next goal was to run a marathon. So we have a great program, but that's Dean that you're clapping for, not us, because she deserves the credit for that. And that's really our time, so thank you very much.